North Lawndale. So that's an area that is in the news generally for the violence that
unfortunately
takes place there. Although there's various kinds of violence. Mostly we hear about the guns.
Right.
We don't hear about the violence of real estate manipulation or food deserts or the trauma of families and the destruction of culture that takes place in a system of exploitation such as ours.
Yes, exactly.
You had some community recommendations for the city of Chicago and law enforcement union contracts. Most people, they know about the police and they know about the police being caught lying in regard to Laquan McDonald, but there's a whole history of police lying. The union contract, how it makes it difficult to investigate police, how it facilitates their lying, and what you're hoping people might do once they become aware that this year is the year that these contracts come up for renegotiation.
Exactly.
They'll be negotiated by the mayor.
Right. And ultimately finalized by the city council. So clearly the challenge, I mean, there's right now two major fronts of challenge with, police accountability. Well, I would say three. One's at the state level. One is clearly the citizen oversight and police accountability, and that's, that's a group that's coming together along with the organization we belong to, St. Agatha, that belongs to Community Renewal Society, which is about 90-plus churches, city and suburban, that are working on this issue among a number of other issues that impact racial and economic injustice. So, but in terms of the police accountability piece, there's seven organizations that have come together and are going to make a formal recommendation of an ordinance to the mayor and the city council sometime in the next few months. So that's still in play, and the best support there will be truly try to touch base with one of our organizations so that, because there's no doubt in our minds that we're going to need to mobilize to press the mayor and city council to actually follow through on what is best for our communities. There's a tendency to unfortunately set their own agenda, and it's not always the agenda that really serves their people, but instead serves the mayor and the powers that be. So the second piece, before I get to the police the contract thing, is at the state level, the whole issue of required affidavits for people making complaints against the police, which is an upfront thing, so that when a person makes a complaint to a police officer or about a police officer, they have to actually sign an affidavit, which immediately puts them at risk if somehow that's not followed through on, and the officer decides to sue back, that they could actually be sued. So what we're pressing for at the state level is a delay of that affidavit process so that the COPA board, now interesting name, Citizen Oversight of Police Accountability, which has nothing to do actually with citizen oversight, that the city council set up and the mayor. So at least they have, the possibility of people coming and without that threat to initially, investigate allegations against a police officer. Right now, I think the figure, I'm not totally accurate on this, but I think the figure is about 70% of the initial complaints against police officers get thrown out because the affidavit is not there and the person is not willing to sign an affidavit. So that's a huge obstacle. And we're simply asking that affidavit process to be pushed down the line until an investigation be done, and then the person, in finally testifying, could sign an affidavit, supporting that. So if a person has not signed an affidavit, then the police accountability board, if they get an allegation against an officer, will not be able to follow through. So the idea is, let's eliminate that up front so that that doesn't give them some, leeway and can actually investigate those 70% of cases where there may well be, particular problems with the police officer. So I mean, if we can somehow eliminate that, that would remove a huge obstacle for COPA to do their investigative process in a more effective way. When we move to the police contract, so right now, within the police contract, which is amazing to me, is written in that police officer has, up to 24 hours to file a report after a after an event. When clearly it gives time for those who want to abuse the system to compare notes, you know, with other officers and make sure they're all telling the same story. So we're trying to eliminate that and say, no, that needs to be done up front and as quickly as possible. So, you know, it's eliminate that possibility of, you know,
a chance to lie and to fabricate
evidence.
We saw that in the case of Laquan McDonald.
Definitely appears that way. So some of the other restrictions as well. So, you know, police contract essentially says, you know, that any record for a police officer is eliminated after 5 years. And so there is no way to track whether there is a history with a police officer of abuses, you know, to even look at that. And the contract, you know, currently says that any abuse, you know, any allegation of an abuse by a police officer, that itself it has to be looked at, but any other history of the police officer cannot be looked at. You can only look at the particular case, and you cannot look to see if there's a history there, which is totally, you know, again, contrary to, you know, what happens with a regular person on the streets, you know, who gets arrested. I think just kind of a general statement that, you know, police, you know, are laying on the stand and all that kind of stuff. And again, I always try to qualify that, but it says there is a system, unfortunately, within the police department, a culture within the police department that allows that, and that's every police officer who does not speak out if they see that happen. So, you know, lots of concerns in the mix of this. So, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, I don't know, and a lot of people don't even know this, that the police department hired one of the former proposed candidates for the superintendent's job, Gene Fitzpatrick, I think it's Fitzpatrick, for coming to Chicago and starting and really dealing with the internal processes of the police department, you know, so that there was a system set up where police could report on another police officer without retaliation, you know, from other police officers, you know, and you know, to break down the, you know, the old boys club mentality and all that kind of stuff. So she came in and, you know, great lady. I met her once and seemed passionate and all this kind of stuff. All of a sudden, she's taking another job, you know, saying Chicago is nowhere near where it needs to be. But it may have been her choice to say, this is something I can't cope with when she started seeing the dynamics of the system. So, you know, and I mean, I had every hope for her. I think good lady. I had read her bio, you know, when she was first nominated for the job and all that kind of stuff. And then when found out, you know, that they actually had hired her for this position, had met her and just, you know, said, you know, I said, you're going to have two major obstacles. Okay. In making this success, one is going to be the police union. And the second is going to be the mayor, you know, and just to be very honest to say, you know, the mayor, the only thing the mayor cares about is perception of Chicago, you know, and the only reason he would make this work is to improve the image of Chicago. Does he care about the people affected by this? Some people I don't think he cares at all about. So
he dances to the tune of the people who own Chicago, the Pritzkers and the families.
Right, that, right, yeah, that, sure.
That, exactly. That have poured the concrete, the Crown families and the owners of North Michigan Avenue's upscale shopping district. This is WZRD Chicago. We're speaking with Father Larry Dowling of St. Agatha's Church on West Douglas Boulevard. That's North Lawndale. And also involved with restorative justice. So let's get back to talking about something that's time-dependent now, because these contracts mm-hmm. are open for negotiation.
Right, right. And so I think that's going to be part of the key, is for people to call their aldermen and to press them and say, this is important to us, this is important to our communities, to all of our communities, you know, because, again, the tendency is, well, okay, this is not our community that's affected by this or that or whatever, but, you know.
It happens to be every time somebody gets beat up by a cop.
Yeah, exactly.
There is a story on one of the local online media about two University of Chicago graduate students who were beaten up by cops, and they spent 2.5 years trying to get justice. The cops would not give up the names of the people they knew, the other cops who beat them up, and the city dragged it out through the legal process and harassment. None of the cops were ever punished.
Right, right, yep. Yeah. So you're right. I mean, it's pretty universal, you know. But you know, I think some of our aldermen say, "Well, that, you know, that doesn't happen, or it doesn't happen often in our community." So you know,
it's not my issue. So. At one of the hearings that the Aldermanic Committee on Safety held regarding police accountability, and was at Senn High School. The majority of the testimony wanted civilian control, and more than half of the people who spoke about the abuse that they had suffered from police were white, up on the north side.
And that, I mean, and again, that's, I mean, that's very likely. I'm not surprised at that. So the hard thing, I think, in this last round when we were trying to, you know, challenge COPA, and, you know, and just the weak way that that came through, you know, in any sort of resolution. There were some advancements, but nowhere near what needs to be done. You know, was that, you know, every, I mean, the Black Caucus, the Hispanic Caucus, you know, and everybody else, well, especially the Black and Hispanic Caucus, just kind of caved on that whole thing. And, you know, and of course, everybody else was... yeah, no question about it. Lots of, you know, lots of backroom stuff and all that.
There were 10 aldermen, or at that time 9, supporting CAPA. Sounds similar to COPA. CAPA also for a restructuring of policing in the city, placing it in the hands of citizens through an elected board.
Right.
That's not what the Community Renewal Society advocates.
Right.
Can you explain why, if you... also are opposed to an elected civilian police accountability council, you would be opposed to that?
Well, it's not necessarily opposed. Just questioning whether a true independent group could actually happen because of the force of, you know, influence and all that, you know, and that the educational process, you know, and that the education, necessary education for each of those members would be there to make sure that, you know, they clearly knew all in the information, making informed decisions, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, the problem in Chicago is, you know, just, you know, people, you know, influencing others and who would the powers that be seek to influence to be on that board, you know, quote, citizens, but that are really representing, you know, the politicians. So so the question, I think, is just the manageability of it, for one thing, and, you know, and the overall, you know, process. Now, there's
which isn't to say that it couldn't be developed so that it meets the criteria you're concerned.
Right, since, right. And it might be able to, you know, it would be interesting to see that possibility. I mean, I'm not ruling it out. I'm not opposed to it. I just think there's other models in other cities that have been, you know, have been effective. And, you know, for example, in Seattle and I think in Newark, where they have, you know, it's citizen oversight. There's one person that, you know, kind of guides the process who is independent. And, you know, and, you know, for example, the person in Seattle is actually a Catholic deacon. He, you know, who, you know, has a history in law enforcement, all that kind of stuff, but, you know, was not, you know, you can tell he's being successful because, you know, he does have a good relationship with the superintendent. As he says, they don't always agree, but, you know, but for the most part, the superintendent does agree with his recommendations, and he knows he's being successful because the police union is constantly trying to undermine him. So, yeah, and like I said, I'm not opposed to it. I think we're looking at different models, and, you know.
The existing police contract makes it possible for them to lie. And it also makes it possible for officers to change their statements, meaning if they give testimony and it's shown to be false because of other evidence, that they change without penalty.
Exactly. All of those things. All of those things. Yep. So that's what we're trying to get eliminated from the contract is, you know, all those things. I've never heard of any organization's contract including those sorts of things. It's amazing to me that those even exist in that contract, but they do, and we definitely need to counter them. So
perhaps is the result of the way the police are used in this city and maybe throughout their history as agents of people with money, of corporations, business, real estate, use the police to push people out of areas, to suppress workers.
I mean, sure.
If you start to read any of the labor history of Chicago, the police not only were paid by the citizens, they were paid by the factory owners to smash heads and break strikes and Haymarket, for which this city is.
I mean, there's you talk to some of the former gang leaders in the community, and you know, and you hear histories of, you know, police actually escorting drugs into the community to be sold, you know, to basically let the community deteriorate and all that kind of stuff. So I mean, it's just back in the 60s, 70s. So.
And you also have the outright murder of political activists.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of testimony in regard to that.
Lots of pictures.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that I think, you know, just, you know, you mentioned kind of the you know, the powers that be and the people in with money and all that kind of stuff, you know, and the whole regentrification thing, I think is really key, because, you know, in a lot of ways right now, North Lawndale, you know, is, I think, you know, at least from my perspective, is being seen as kind of a low-level penitentiary, you know, that, you know, just kind of seclude these people and let the community deteriorate, and let's not put too much energy into it.
There is gentrification going on
No question. I mean, it's coming. I don't know how soon, but it's coming. And I think our challenge is how do we organize people in the community to, you know, to stand up. Well, of course, we want to welcome new people. We've got vacant, you know, land and vacant lots, but of course we want to welcome people. But we want the people that are here to be able to stay here, you know, and the good families that do live here, you know, continue to live and thrive here. So that's the overall goal.
Is this a part of a coalition?
So there's a number of organizations. I can't name them all right off. Involved actually in each of those issues. So one on the citizen oversight, and one, you know, that's putting together citizen oversight ordinance, and one that is putting together or addressing the police contract. So CRS is involved in both of those. I mean, I think my recommendation, obviously, since it's close to home, is to connect with CRS. You can go on the website.
That's Community Renewal Society.
Right. www.communityrenewalsociety.org. There's a place on there to, you know, continue to update on progress on these issues. Probably the best way to stay in touch and, send me regular information, keep me apprised of actions and things like that are going on. People can also connect with their local churches that might be involved in CRS. Like I said, there's 90-plus now in both the city and suburbs in probably every region of the city.
This is WZRD Chicago. We're speaking with Father Larry Dowling of St. Agatha Church in North Lawndale. They're involved with restorative justice and the community court program. They're involved with this effort to revamp policing in Chicago by changing the contract that currently governs police behavior so that it would remove the impunity that currently the police have to lie, to change their stories, to destroy records of civilian complaints. You gave out some information about radical solidarity. That was the title of the workshop I met you at. Can you speak about radical solidarity?
Sure. So radical solidarity, I always operate from the term radical, which many people will take and say, okay, radical means, you know, just you're out there, you're violent, you're, you know, all these sorts of things, when the word radical actually means that you're rooted in something. So whether you belong to a faith community or, you know, I think the question always to ask is where is your foundation? What are you rooted in? What is the source of your passion? You know, all those sorts of things. Out of that, what is it that you seek together with others on, and to, you know, that you're passionate about, you know, and willing to work on? And literally, you know, to, you know, in terms of the radicals. So the prophets were radicals. They were willing to put, you know, Christ clearly was a radical, you know, literally put his life on the line and lost his life because of, you know, just loving unconditionally. You know, what are you willing to, what, you know, what are you willing to, you know, to die for? You know, and it's not necessarily physical dying, but, you know, the reputation, friendship, jobs, sometimes family. You know, I think, you know, there's lots of tension with families over the last election, you know, and in some cases our very lives, you know. So what are we willing to risk, and how do we do that? So, you know, again, there's, you know, this spirit of, you know, of radical, which really means to be, you know, to be rooted in the truth. And of course, you know, the truth these days is a tough commodity for, you know, some people to grasp. But are we opening ourselves up to really explore, you know, the depth of an issue and you know, in both sides of an issue, and just try to come to understand, you know, and be able to speak to that issue and act, you know, on that issue in the most informed way. So not just with our passion, but with our intellect as well. So how do we do that? And I think the other piece of, you know, for me, of the radical piece is, are we willing to step out of our comfort zone? And it's not just, you know, in terms of acting, but in who we will relate to. It, you know, are we willing to reach out to those who don't necessarily agree with our values and open up to a conversation that is not our usual talking about and talking at each other, but really talking with each other. So I think all of those things are part, for me, of radical solidarity. How do we, you know, what are we rooted in? You know, what is it that fortifies us to, you know, to keep going physically, emotionally, spiritually in this? Where are we drawing our sources of information, you know, and the truth that we are acting on? And what are we fighting for? What are we willing to die for in the midst of that? I think, you know, and I think, well, at least for me, is the solidarity piece. So I think people are so, in this crazy age of technology that's supposed to be linking us all, I think we are so disconnected as people. And I mean in terms of relational connections, you know, relating across the internet and, you know, through the various media is not relating, right? And yet, you know, there's the perception and, you know, assumption that is the case, you know. And so we need to do the hard work. The hard work of solidarity is in actually bringing people together in conversation, in building relationship, in respecting that everyone, absolutely everyone, brings a wisdom and brings an experience that can enrich us all. And so, you know, how do we create those spaces where that can happen, you know? And I mean, in a community like North Lawndale, I think our challenge right now, and we're being challenged by, you know, a number of parents that we've been reaching out to, is we need spaces, you know, we need safe spaces where we can come together and talk, because out on the street, everybody's talking smack, everybody's talking negative, everybody's talking at and about other people, but there is little really talking with, you know, reasonable conversation, sometimes heated conversation, of course, you know, but how do we create a space where people really can come together to talk? And that's, you know, and that's really at the restorative, you know, at the heart of restorative justice is, you know, how do we bring people together, you know, initially, you know.
Well, how do you do that? And well, what's a circle keeper?
Right. Okay. So let's talk about that. Okay. So peace circles are one avenue of working within restorative justice, and actually a great methodology. So, you know, a circle keeper, you know, essentially leads the circle, is an equal in the circle, you know, in terms of sharing and all of that, but essentially is the person that you know, just kind of helps guide the process and roots people. You know, so within a peace circle, you start out with an agreement on values that are being brought into the circle, and there's four essential values that have to happen in every circle that everyone has to agree with, and those four are mutual respect, active listening to each other, are being non-judgmental of each other, and our confidentiality. That's what is said in the circle, stays in the circle, unless for some reason everybody says, we're all going to go out and shout this to everybody. So those four values are very key values. And then you have the additional values question about, you know, are there other values that people think will be important in the circle? And then there's just general consensus on that. The order of the circle is that, you know, you have a talking piece, and only the person holding the talking piece is, you know, can speak. So, you know, it forces everybody else to listen. You know, one person is speaking and responding to a particular question or whatever that the circle keeper, you know, will raise. So, so what happens within the circle is, you know, you start out at a basic level of trying to bond. So the circle literally is an open circle. So there's no table or anything like that in the middle. So it's the space that really, where again, there's a sense of equality. There's nothing in between anybody, you know, and the other person. And we're all in this, you know, kind of united circle together. And so, you know, you start out the circle with, you know, just kind of an intro, you know, people introducing themselves, but then asking a question that kind of can build a sense of, you know, of unity initially with the group. So One of the things we do initially was just, we just did a circle with, safe passage workers who are workers who stand on the street and make sure the kids get to and from their homes to schools every day, during the school year. So we met with a group of safe passage workers. And so the initial question we asked them was, think about one person in your life who has gotten you safe passage to this point in time in your life. Somebody who has helped guide you, somebody who has protected you, somebody who has helped you get to where you are today, and name that person and talk about that person, okay? And you go around the circle, everybody shares, and then you just simply say, okay, we've all recognized people who have given us safe passage, let's reverence them, let's realize that they are with us in this circle now, their spirit is with us, and let us move to the next level. And you start then going to next levels of trying to kind of how do we get people to think about particular roles that they have, particular things that they're doing, and again, in the shared experience, realize that it brings healing, it brings some hope, and it brings really some energy oftentimes, and people really wanting to go out and act, out of that energy to bring, some, positive things into the world. Real quick example. So the first time I learned about this was, through Father Dave Kelly, who runs Precious Blood Ministries on the South Side, a wonderful organization that does, just incredible work in this. And Father Dave is just an exceptional priest and does restorative justice, and his whole team do restorative justice constantly throughout the day, in the jails and you name it, in the community, everywhere. But the first I learned about was, when I heard a story about Dave being approached by a group of women who had lost loved ones, to gun violence. So he brought them together in a circle where they were able to, share their pain and hurt and, all this kind of stuff along the way. The energy that was built, in that mutual sharing over about 3 months of sharing, once a month coming together, that group of women decided to invite the mothers of the perpetrators of the violence. Mm-hmm. Into the circle. And so they came and they built this solidarity among themselves. And then they together, after a few more months, decided to go out and start doing peace work in the community as a collective. So again, the power of circle is that, again, it allows what I call, from faith perspective, a sacred space where people can come and share, with freedom and everyone is enriched by each other, in the sharing. So it's creating those spaces where there can be conversations. So we are doing this right now. I've got two guys who are former gang members who work for me who are doing this work in a couple of the local schools. And they are meeting with kids, teenagers, once a week in their homeroom classes where the teacher has invited them to come in. And they're basically doing circles with these kids around topics that the kids want to talk about. And in those circles, the kids are very thoughtful, very respectful of each other, different views, all this kind of stuff, and there's just a real solidarity that is building within them. The next level of that that I'm asking them to do with these kids is to start asking the question, two questions. First of all, can you get your parents to join us in one of these circles so that we can engage their family, the whole family in this, and start working with the whole family unit to transform the family? The other piece is to start asking the question, okay, what's different in these conversations and the conversations you're having out on the street? And we've started asking that question, and the kids invariably say, this is not happening out on the street. We talk about each other. We talk at each other. You're constantly at each other. And so then the next question is, okay, how do we bring these talking with conversations out on the street and into our homes, yeah, and all that sort of thing. So, and that's the, so those are the things we're really trying to get at with some of these circles, is how do we take the power of this and start bringing it into those places where these conversations are not happening at all.
The difference between competition and collaboration, alternate model of how life is organized, and it's reflected in the economic system of capitalism versus cooperatives.
Right,
and
exactly.
That
exactly.
It's a symbiotic relationship, not what we're told is necessary to succeed in this society, as
right.
well as what we're shown through the corporate culture, which has come to dominate
exactly.
society and is threatening the planet, actually.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of, you know, another methodology that we're trying to implement with this as well is, you know, so as, you know, as we're teaching these kids, you know, the circle process and they're involved in the circle process, actually we're moving toward helping them to become circle keepers and really trying to move toward, you know, in all of the aspects. So it's us mentoring youth and then youth mentoring other youth. It's us mentoring parents and then parents mentoring other parents. So in every case, someone has a mentor and that same person is mentoring someone else.
People wanting to be involved as a circle keeper or to learn more about it, mm-hmm. Who can they contact?
Actually, they feel free to contact me. I mean, I'm more than happy. You know, we have a good team here, and we actually host trainings here. We're doing it once a month here, actually in conjunction with the North Lawndale Restorative Justice Hub and the coming Restorative Justice Court. But they can reach me and feel free to call me here at the office, the 773-522-3050.
You're also involved with several other programs.
So Showing Up for Racial Justice, actually, you know, I have a number of my members here at St. Agatha who are part of that. I myself am not, but definitely supported, and we've hosted some of their events here. It's mostly young people, but, you know, and mostly young white people, but there's, you know, the age range is really all over the place. But it's a group of, you know, that came together of young white people who, you know, I think in a response to the Black Lives Matter movement, to say, how can we walk with this movement, you know, and support them, you know, and learn ourselves about, you know, the dynamics of racism and all this so that we can accompany these people, you know, along the way and be there in some way. So, and this is a national group, so Showing Up for Racial Justice is a national group, but the local group is growing and growing and growing. And in the couple of meetings that I've been where, you know, I've come and observed just incredible passion, incredible, you know, and a variety of ways that they're looking at how, you know, racism is expressed and, you know, and significant ways to act. So it's a great organization to connect with.
Arise Chicago?
So Arise Chicago is actually the original interfaith worker justice in Chicago and kind of the roots of the national interfaith worker justice. So it's been around for, well, how many years now? Over 25 years. It's focused on workers' rights. You know, and I'm chair of the board for the organization right now, and our work, you know, focuses on helping workers, basically, who are, you know, struggling with wage theft or, you know, sometimes with unions, you know, trying to, you know, establish unions and those sorts of things. So we run a workers center, a workers' rights center that people can call in, and it can be a single employee or a group of employees, you know, to talk about offenses at their workplace, and we will accompany them to, you know, help resolve the issue. A lot of people don't know, but the amount of wage theft in Chicago, which ranges from, you know, just not paying people, you know, to asking them to clock out and then work another couple extra hours to keep their jobs, to not giving overtime, not paying minimum wage. The average in Chicago is $1 million a day that is stolen from people. And so organization typically helps recoup about $1 million of that a year for, you know, for people that come to us. You know, we have a group of pro bono lawyers that work with us to do that. You know, we also try to get out and work, you know, especially with immigrant workers, but, you know, really any workers, you know, to do workers' rights workshops. We have a workers' rights manual that we put together that's in English and Spanish and Polish right now that we make available to people that details, you know, all of their rights, you know, in the workplace.
People wanted to see the community recommendations for City of Chicago and law enforcement union contract.
If they just want to email me, I'd be glad to send it to them, so I'd be glad to give my email address. So my email is, you know, it's not going to make sense to some people, but it's Dennis, D-E-N-I-S, which is my former parish, St. Dennis. So D-E-N-I-S, one N, Padre, P-A-D-R-E, at AOL.com. And then the website is www.st-agatha-chicago.org.
Is there anything that you want to say?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, the whole restorative justice movement in Chicago is growing, and you know, and I think it holds great promise. I mean, you know, the whole idea that we need to repair and reshape our criminal justice system and find ways to avoid incarceration and actually have communities step up to take responsibility for, you know, individuals who, you know, have done harm to others, to do that in a way that actually is restorative and not retribution and you know, incarceration and all those sorts of things. We want to treat everybody, you know, with the respect, you know, as I often say to people, you know, we've got to give everybody the possibility to pursue and use their God-given potential. So however we can do that, that's what we seek to do.